walk in peace. We're gonna walk inside. And just whips up, put the food on my plate, add some coke in my cup. Give me some chicken, fake survives, living past me and lettuce of a passage by. So you shoveling onto my plate. Give me some sweets and a lot of cake. Give me some hot macaroni and cheese. Give me some more food, please. Give me some bologna, salami and ham. Toast with butter and strawberry jam. I love it whether the food is cold or hot. Put a burger on the plate and it'll hit the spot. We'll eat everything in an incredible feast.
Good evening and welcome to Health Matters. I'm Dr. Sanford Katz. I'll be your host this evening as we talk about healthy eating throughout the holidays. I've always wanted to be a DJ, and that was my premiere. I think I'll stick to hosting. Now, this holiday season has begun already, and Thanksgiving and Christmas are quickly approaching. It's a time when we celebrate with family and friends over a feast of food and may even indulge in some seasonal drinks as well. But, according to the CDC, more than 34 million people in the United States have diabetes, and one in four of them don't even know they have it. More than 88 million U.S. adults, one in three have prediabetes, and 90% of them don't know they have it. So it's important to pay attention to our health, even while we're celebrating. This evening, we're going to talk about how to celebrate in a way that doesn't compromise your health, and to help us to do that, I am joined this evening by Dr. Kimball Rivari, endocrinologist with Willis-Knighton Health System, Shelley Redman, registered dietitian and author of Skinny Louisiana Cookbooks, and Megan Mabry, registered dietitian and certified yoga instructor. Welcome, everybody.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you.
And we've got Megan. Good. All right. We've got Megan via Zoom. And, Louisiana is really its tops when it comes to lots of things, including football and hunting and fishing, festivals, jazz, Mardi Gras, Cajun food, all sorts of fun. Unfortunately, it's consistently at or near the bottom when it comes to health and healthy lifestyle, both for adults and children. And, you know, I often prepare for these shows looking at statistics, and I was disappointed to see that in general, the state ranks pretty low in terms of health statistics when compared to national averages. Obesity is a real problem, and I think just recently Louisiana was ranked the most obese of the states. That is, 36% of the population of Louisiana would technically qualify as being obese. But it doesn't stop there. We also do rather poorly in terms of cardiovascular disease. We ranked about 46 out of 50 states. We, in terms of heart disease and stroke, we're number 45. Diabetes, we're 47 out of 50. And, you know, these numbers are, unfortunately, they keep climbing. Going back to the 90s, we had about less than 10% of people were considered obese, and now it's over 30%. Diabetes, likewise, was only about 7%, and now it's up much, you know, maybe double, triple of that. And same is the case with high blood pressure. So something's unfortunately going on, and it's not just with adults. It's even with children. Of all the states, we rank near the top, which, and not a good way, in terms of obesity rates amongst children aged 10 to 17. So I think all this fun, a lot of which is food-based and festival-based and maybe even hurricanes and other drinks, I think there's a bit of a price to pay. And so what we're going to talk about this evening is how to perhaps modify our lifestyle so that we continue to have fun, enjoy the foods that we love, while also taking care of our health. And we're going to talk about this from a perspective of not just health, but, you know, also practically. And we have Shelley here, who's been on the show before, and she's the author of Skinny Louisiana, and a little bit later we're going to be trying out some of her recipes. We've prepared a few. Each of us have taken our hand, with the exception of Megan, who's here on Zoom, at some of these recipes, and we're going to get a chance to taste them a little bit later. And of course, as always, this is a live call-in show, and so you're encouraged to call in questions or comments or even some suggestions at 1-800-552-8502. So, Dr. Kimball Rivari, let's start off with obesity. I've already outlined that it is a problem in terms of the rates are rising, but why is it a problem in terms of health? What is it about obesity that is bad for us?
Well, you know, we've got great food in Louisiana. What can I say? You know, that just really increases our risk. But, you know, it's I think as a culture and as a whole, you know, we're just not as mobile as we used to be. I think, you know, thanks to computers, thanks to TV, thanks to all the technology that we have, a lot of patients, both at home and at work, we're not on the move as much. You know, I think it's, you know, getting out and walking around the block, or getting out and, you know, even taking the stairs, you know, forgetting to do a lot of little things that we used to do. It's a lot easier just to get on the elevator or get in our car and go somewhere. And all of that, along with poor eating habits, quite frankly, are leading to insulin resistance that is putting us at risk for diabetes. And being obese puts us at risk to so many other illnesses, such as high blood pressure, high cholesterol, heart disease, stroke, all of those that you mentioned earlier. And it's just unfortunate that once that snowball starts, it just keeps going and going and going. And you just have to stop. You just have to stop the cycle. So it's all of our lifestyle habits that are leading to obesity that then lead to all of those underlying comorbidities or other underlying medical conditions that put us at higher risk for further trouble.
Yeah, you know, the word comorbidities, you know, it's always been a medical term, but it's really entered into kind of the lay press and the media now when it comes to coronavirus. You always hear about comorbidities, these, you know, rates of death from coronavirus related to comorbidities. And in Louisiana, unfortunately, our mortality risk from COVID-19, meaning the likelihood of you dying if you get it, is higher than the national average. And when you look at these comorbidities or other illnesses, we tend to have higher rates of them, as I mentioned earlier. So that translates into, you know, it can translate into a negative impact, even just from something like a virus,
right?
Not just, you know, end stage results of diabetes or high blood pressure or stroke or things like that. So, you know, you mentioned the mobility. You know, when I was a kid, probably like most of you, and Megan's a lot younger than we are, but we all used to ride our bikes everywhere. Mm-hmm. And you know, now I see kids with these motorized vehicles. I don't see kids riding bikes. And also, you know, if we wanted to see our friends, we had to like get on our bike and, you know, ride down the block and see if our friend was home. And now you just, kids stay home, they text, they get into these group texts. So yeah, I definitely agree with you. It seems like we're just much less active.
Well, people are even texting in the same household. You know, instead of getting up and walking downstairs and talking to somebody, you just text somebody at home.
Yeah.
So it's even down to being at home, less mobile.
Yeah. So Shelley, you've been a nutritionist for quite some time. What was your...
Thank you for telling that to everyone.
Not that long, but I mean, you know, your experience is what I mean. So what was your motivation to start Skinny Louisiana and to make your cookbook and your
yes.
YouTube channel?
I love this question. So I grew up definitely in a food world. I grew up in ag, believe it or not. I raised rabbits. I showed rabbits in 4-H. And really, that kind of cultivated my entire career, was these sweet little bunnies that I used to raise and show and kind of train. And from there, I kind of said, I mean, this was before the internet. So there was no looking online. There was no blogs at the time. Long story short, I just kind of told my parents, hey, I'm going to go to school and major in food. I didn't even know it was called dietetics. And I was really blessed because the school I went to had a culinary arts program. And so I did this weird combined degree. degree where we really learned how to cook, and part of our degree was going into towns and teaching people how to cook. And for those of y'all wondering, I'm from Houma, which is south of New Orleans, so it definitely was a Cajun-based culinary program, but we really learned the basics, and we taught folks that, and really it kind of just was a combination of agriculture and food. And when I graduated from college, long story short, again, I'm trying to give the Cliff Notes version, but I did an internship at the VA, worked at the VA, and kind of woke up one day and said, you know what, it's time for me to go back to my roots, go back to what I love, which is cooking, and hence the Skinny Louisiana development. Now, the cookbook is a whole other funny story. I kind of failed miserably at a cooking competition in New Orleans, but there was a publisher there, and she said, you really lost graciously, and you had the crowd laughing the entire time, so we want you to publish a cookbook with us. But really, that whole premise of that cookbook was we took basic recipes that were Cajun-based, and we made them over, but we didn't make them over insulting. And I think that's so important for Thanksgiving. And sometimes while folks are afraid to come and see us, they think we're going to change their life. And I'm just here to say, hey, if we can just make some simple modifications, we are going to be good. Like, we're not going to insult Granny's recipe, because my mama from back home, she would come up from the grave and beat my butt if I completely transferred all of her recipes. It's just taking some of them and just adding a little here and there, and maybe subtracting a little here and there, and we still have a fabulous dish. So that was the Cliff Note version. I hope that's okay.
Gotcha. No, it's fantastic. And now, Megan, now you also have experiences as a dietitian. In fact, you've worked in a hospital setting, so you're familiar with these folks with comorbidities and figuring out an appropriate diet for them, both while they're in the hospital as well as when they go home. And then also, I understand that you're also involved on the other side, not just the intake, but the output. That is not just what people are eating, but also what they're doing with their bodies. And can you say a little bit about that?
So I was fortunate enough to get trained in Ashtanga yoga, which is the physical practice of yoga. And it led me to teaching. And so I've been teaching at Willis-Knighton in the fitness centers, and then able to translate that to also teaching in the clinical setting for cancer survivors, cancer patients, even residents within the medical school. So it's a great tool, I think, to help people be curious about how good their body can feel based on these proven techniques of breathing and moving. You can restructure your physiology and change the way your body is functioning. So it's very powerful. It's a very powerful tool.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting. I'm a cancer doctor, and when I was in medical school, the thing that really impressed me was what a large percentage of conditions that I was learning about and afflicted people regularly were either avoidable, manageable, or modifiable greatly by what people put in their mouth and did with their body. And cancer, with the exception of maybe smoking, and to some degree, sometimes diet does influence your risk of developing cancer. But, you know, cancer to me is a little bit different in that respect. But it's always kind of inspired me and encouraged me to kind of take what I learned and try to really be cognizant of what I do with my body and what I put in it. And so when we're talking about altering some of those behaviors, I understand there's a lot of resistance. So what are some of the obstacles that you found, Megan, when you're working with patients who are being discharged from the hospital and you try to get them to modify their diet?
Well, I think, you know, socioeconomics always play a role. People's access to, you know, shopping, convenience. Shreveport has an issue with that, I would say, for sure, you know. So just that's been a challenge and an interesting dynamic. I think compliance comes down to if people really want to change and if they see the value of change. And if they believe that they can, I think a lot of people don't try because they don't really believe it's a reality for them. Yeah. So they set themselves right there. So I think it's part of it is just the mentality of it's not going to make a difference what I eat.
Yeah.
So what's the point in making the change?
Yeah. Dr. Kimball Rivera, you mentioned diabetes, pre-diabetes, insulin resistance, things of that sort. To what degree do you find that diet, exercise, and lifestyle impact your patients in terms of and how you manage them and their need for medication and their development of complications? How important is it in your practice?
Well, let's see. That's a great question. It matters 100%. Because it is diet and exercise. It's, you know, it's lifestyle modification. If I say it once, I say it 1,000 times every day with every patient. And that's whether they're diabetic, whether, you know, I get into the conversation with patients with thyroid disease, that are patients that are overweight or may have other insulin resistant type syndromes with polycystic ovarian syndrome or whatever it may be. It's key because it is what we're putting in our mouth. And it is, you know, the lack of exercise that can lead up to obesity or being overweight that leads to insulin resistance. And someone doesn't have to be morbidly obese to develop diabetes. And then of course, there's different types of diabetes, type 1 or type 2, but we're really talking about the type 2 insulin, you know, resistant patient that is overweight that puts them at risk to develop diabetes. And, you know, if I always tell patients, gosh, if I could have just caught you a few years ago or 5 years ago, I could, you know, help you with some of these diet and lifestyle modifications where you wouldn't even develop diabetes. I think a lot of patients don't realize that you don't go to bed one day, you know, non-diabetic and wake up the next day. It's been working on you for years, this insulin resistance and the way that you've been abusing your body with putting in more sugars and more carbohydrates and fats. It's leading up to the wrong fats, essentially. It's leading up to insulin resistance and leading to pre-diabetes and diabetes. And, you know, patients need to be called early on and really be counseled with and taught some things and ways and that they can and tips that they can use with their diet and lifestyle modification, because it affects it 100%. That is what the most of my day is spent talking with my diet patients about. You know, I tell oftentimes with patients that come in that are, you know, maybe not being compliant with taking their medication or not being compliant with their diet or exercise, and I look at them, I'm like, you know, I could sit here and I could increase your insulin, I could increase your dose and keep going up on your medication and add more medicine, but really, if you could go home and work on what you're eating and listen to the nutritionist, listen to your body and you know, do better with your diet, do better with your exercise, we wouldn't have to add more medicine. We wouldn't have to add more insulin. So I have that talk quite a lot with patients. So it really affects it a lot.
Yeah. You know, thinking about it, and I've had this experience myself with patients, although as a cancer doctor, one of the things that I often will do when I treat cancers of the head, neck, and throat is that my treatment will adversely affect the patient's taste buds, and it can take 3 months to a year for their taste buds to come back. During that time, they don't have the palate for some of those foods, and it's not unusual for people to lose considerable amounts of weight. And I always joke that I've probably cured more diabetes and high blood pressure than any endocrinologist or internist. But it's, and you know, many times after their cancer is eradicated, they're actually a lot healthier because they take off that weight. But that, as you said, that weight doesn't come on all at once. It's gradual. I read a statistic that people gain somewhere between 3 to 5 pounds between Thanksgiving and New Year's. And that if you don't take it off, it just every year you just gets added on and on and on. And, you know, in all fairness, I think as physicians, we may say, or as dietitians or nutritionists, and we may say, oh, you should lose weight. But I think we may also fail to appreciate how hard it is to lose weight. There's a first, you know, when you get to a certain size, your joints hurt. It's hard to exercise. You're winded. It's discouraging. You want, you know, walking up a flight of stairs, walking down the, you know, down the street. Maybe you don't live in the nicest neighborhood. And it's not safe to walk around. Maybe it's just too hot outside. You know, that alone, it's there are obstacles. And as Megan was saying, you know, I mean, you may not have great access to a local grocery store where you can get fresh vegetables. you have to actually plan to make a healthy meal. I mean, it's inconvenient, and you have to have the money to buy those foods a week ahead of time, put them in the refrigerator. Well, if you get paid on a daily basis for doing a job, you know, then you've got enough money, you go get convenient food, right? And then, you know, healthy food costs more money. I mean, bad food's cheap. And, you know, the other thing is, the culture, we mentioned that earlier, you know, so much of Louisiana culture revolves around food and friends and family. And when you're cooking for your family, I mean, imagine you have someone and it's mom, and mom needs to lose weight, and so mom's gonna change the meals, and the rest of the family is not happy with mom because no one's going to eat that food. They don't want it. And so it makes it kind of hard, you know. So it would be nice if there was a way to kind of consider all of these aspects collectively. And I just think, you know, I think it's challenging. I think there should be a place where we can have people go and actually have, you know, kind of a counseling look at the entire picture. Megan, do you have any experience with that sort of, I guess, idealized scenario?
Absolutely. I would love to see it in schools. You know, I think that's where you start, is by teaching kids, right? So if we were offering healthier meal options in schools and subsidizing those kinds of foods, it would just naturally lead to society being able to function more in that way.
Yeah.
And, so that, you know, would be my idealistic notion.
And Shelley, I think you've got a great strategy, though, is that you're not necessarily trying to change people's palate. You're trying to just modify the ingredients and make it a little healthier, huh?
Right. So, I mean, really the basics is you take a recipe and you just say, what if here I can change that's not going to insult Meemaw? You know, so for me, I'm Cajun, so I'm not going to pull out crawfish. I'm not going to pull out shrimp. I'm not going to pull out any kind of seafood. And just fun fact, I actually don't eat turkey for Thanksgiving. I don't like it. I'm a big seafood person, but I married somebody from Ohio, so we have the split seafood, you know, Thanksgiving meal. So we never lose our culture. We never lose who we are. We just kind of say, hey, can we maybe change? We're obviously a low-carb clinic because we do a lot of weight loss and diabetes, but it's, can we change some of these sugar to maybe a all-natural sugar substitute, you know, not kind of the scary ones from the 80s, but can we do this? And where can we find it on sale? And we are huge sales ad folks. I have no problem going and shop at, you know, maybe not the most fanciest stores, but we're not going to name store names so no one can get angry or upset or anything, but there's nothing wrong with that. And when we take stigma out of that, like, oh, you must go and shop here, oh, you must go and do this, that's ridiculous. That makes our patients feel like complete, you know, useless. And even me, because I mean, I grew up in agriculture. We're not the richest population on the planet, but we kind of pick one or two ingredients. I always tell folks, don't modify more than two ingredients because the whole recipe changes. So usually I play with sugar and then I usually add something to it. I either add something fiber rich, which is a vegetable, or I will add maybe something that I can kind of boost that recipe. Maybe a flavoring, maybe a broth, maybe some type of spice or seasoning. But I'm very careful about spices and seasonings if there's kids in the house, and we'll just use your basic light salt, light pepper, and so that way the entire family can enjoy it. And then I do meal planning. This is usually what I do with my clients. Monday we do some type of meatball, Tuesday we do something taco, Wednesday is usually leftovers so we don't waste, Thursday is usually breakfast at night, Friday some type of fast food, and hopefully they have an air fryer. I usually tell them to request that as a Christmas present or a birthday present, so we can do something like turkey burgers in there or beef burgers. That way we have the variety that's not just chicken and green beans, because that's always what, you know, you see like on TV whenever they have those meal prep commercials, and I'm just chicken and broccoli, we're over it. So we do that type of lineup so that there's not boredom and that everybody's okay. Most kids eat meatballs. Most kids will eat a burger and they could do their bun while we do maybe the lettuce wrap or something of that sort with it. So we simple little changes can make a huge difference.
You mentioned fiber.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about why fiber is important.
So we love fiber in our clinic. Fiber, number one, keeps us full. Okay. So what, let's kind of compare that. So back in the day, and I love to always say back in the day, you know, back in the day, it was popular to eat like the fat-free cornflakes for breakfast. Everybody had a bowl of cornflakes. And at 9 o'clock in the morning, we were rambunctiously starving and we ate all the books that were on that row over there. So what we say is that, you know, while the cornflakes were low fat, woohoo, 15 grams of carbs. Okay. It just didn't have fiber. So it just didn't have anything to keep us full. But when we switch to a fiber-rich cereal, and we don't want to name brands because I don't know how that works over here, but I tell folks, try to look for about 7 grams of fiber or higher. It will keep us fuller longer. So our water hits it and it expands. So when it expands, we stay full. So we're not going to mindless munch until lunchtime. The other thing about fiber, most of us have been to a doctor and they're like, oh, okay, fiber helps to absorb cholesterol levels. It actually helps to, we find, absorb blood glucose levels, but we actually find that it helps to, we don't want to say burn calories because I don't want folks to go to the store and buy out everything fiber rich along with everything else that's getting bought out right now. But it can help to kind of, let's say, how can I say this politely? It takes a long time to get digested, if you know what I mean. So it takes a long time to pass through that digestive system so we stay full. And it can help do a little metabolism rev up, not anything like burn calories, but the point is keeps us full, keeps us satiated, which is a big word that just means keeps us full for our next meal. So we love fiber. Also, lots of veg. So we do at least 2 cups of vegetables at each meal. High fiber fruits, berries. Sadly, those are not really in season right now, but your apples, your pears. If you're that cranberry person, you could just put a batch on the stove in your little saucepan, add about a teaspoon of water to it. I am a big, I don't know if we could say brands, but a natural sugar. We bring it to a boil. And then you let it simmer for about 8 minutes and you have your cranberry sauce for Thanksgiving. That's it. It's simple. It's high fiber. It tastes great.
Nice.
Yeah. We just chefed on air, everybody.
Right.
We just chefed on air.
So Dr. Kimber Rivari, fiber. Is there a value to fiber in people who, let's say, who have diabetes and in terms of glucose control, blood sugar control?
Absolutely. I mean, I totally agree with Shelley and what she just said as far as with metabolism, and because, you know, that fiber doesn't get, you know, you can't break it completely down. So you are going to rid your waste of it. So helping with a little bit of metabolism, like she said, and, you know, staying well hydrated, it will definitely help. It will definitely help cholesterol, blood sugar.
Yeah, I'm thinking like eating the apple versus juicing the apple.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
I like how you politely said that because I was just trying to think, how can I politely say this without sounding gross?
So why wouldn't you want to juice the apple? It'd be better just to eat the apple.
Yes, because it has, again, like you said, that more fiber.
And how do you absorb the sugar in the apple in the absence of fiber? You absorb it faster, right? So the sugar hits you.
You are correct.
It hits your blood. You get a spike in blood sugar without the benefit of the fiber to slow the digestion.
Correct.
And then you get an insulin surge afterwards, right?
Right.
And then don't forget about your protein, too. That's
okay.
Why we always combine it with a protein, you know? And so the good thing about, let's talk a little bit of good. The good thing about our Thanksgiving meal, it's usually turkey, with the exception of me. And if there's viewers out there who don't eat turkey, maybe call in and tell us what you do eat, because I always weird people out when I say I don't like turkey. But it's your turkey, so that's good. So reach for the turkey at Thanksgiving. Reach for, I don't know, ham. If you're like me, reach for seafood. You know, so we love those. One thing I love about the holidays is the meat, you know, because turkey's lean. Nobody really fries fish. I haven't met anybody doing this for 17 years who fries fish. You might have. I'm sure somebody's going to call, I fry fish, and I'm going to just be great. There just went my train of thought there. But I do love the protein that is at the holiday time. So yes, you know, when you get to Thanksgiving, or even if you're doing a small celebration, you can go to the store and get a very tiny turkey breast instead of the big bird, you know, because the big bird's what we see on TV. But if we're having only 4 people over, which is our intermediate house, get a tiny, tiny turkey breast, throw it in the slow cooker, get a little broth, put it in there, slow cook it for 6 to 8 hours, and you still have a nice turkey. You still feel like, hey, I'm getting my Thanksgiving, even if my, you know, extended family's not here. And there's nothing wrong with that. You don't have to cook the big bird if you're not going to have 200 people at your house. Just get the little turkey breasts, and they're at all the grocery stores.
Now, you mentioned keto.
Yes.
Can you define what that means, keto?
So for me, and I do have folks who follow keto in our clinic because we I do treat a lot of migraines like myself, and I am gluten-free. Keto is, the plain definition is high fat, low carb. That is the absolute simple definition of it. It is a higher fat plan. Now,
any fats, or are there certain fats that are better than others?
And I love that you just said that, because you just segue me perfectly. Unfortunately, we'll see, I like to call them Brutuses. Brutus is Brutus. You know, everybody knows a Brutus. You know, Brutus is blah, 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 blah. Brutus orders 1,700 chicken wings and 200 pounds of ranch dressing. And he's like, I am keto. And technically he is right, but that's unfortunately what we don't want folks to do. We want folks to do those beautiful plant-based fats, those great olive oils. Avocado oil is a little bit pricey, but it does work on the grill. So that's where our cooking comes in.
Coconut?
You can do coconut. I actually, this is where we'll get a lot of arguments in. I actually don't like the taste of coconut. So when we teach in our clinic, I still push the olive oil because coconut to me has a flavor. Somebody's probably going to call in and be like, she's crazy. I'm like, that's fine. Coconut oil still does have some saturated fat in it. So again, for those who kind of follow a lot of medical stuff, saturated fat, we know the American Heart Association's like, but there's an argument, you know, and it just kind of depends what side you're on. And I'm on the side of, hey, I really don't like to eat this stuff because I think it tastes funky. But olive's just very good. Avocado's very neutral. And that's what's really nice about it. So it works on the grill, it works with dessert, and it works with a savory dish, so it's a good investment. And then your nuts. So we try to do more of that plant-based kind of keto plan. Not outrageous like Brutus, but that's the struggle. It's that there's so much information and folks come and see me and they're just, my head's about to explode. And I'm like, okay, let's sit down. Let's make sure all of our fats are plant-based. Let's do it this way.
Okay, so that's the keto.
Yeah.
That's primarily fat and protein.
So
low carb.
You got it.
And now, there's some controversy.
You got it.
Right? In
yes.
terms of what's the best diet.
Right.
Now, if you are a combination yoga instructor and dietitian,
yeah.
nutritionist, would this sound like a good diet for you, Megan?
For me personally?
Yeah.
To recommend. So what I found, and this is probably a controversial statement too, the plant-based whole food anti-inflammatory diet with intermittent fasting would be the one, you were going to say one diet for everyone, you know, and modify it as needed. I would say that.
Okay. So not necessarily high fat, high protein, but perhaps more plant-based. But would you qualify those plants? Would you lots of starchy foods like potatoes and rice and things like that? Or would you go for something with more fiber?
So plant-based means fiber, essentially. I don't think that people overeating potatoes that aren't fried is the problem with obesity. I think that people are overeating other things and that's why they're obese. So I don't think there's anything wrong with eating like, you know, high starch carbohydrates.
Okay. So now, Dr. Kimber Rivari, now we need a tiebreaker here.
I mean, he's so like getting in on us over here.
You know,
call in viewers, what y'all think?
It's SmackDown.
call in viewers, what y'all think?
That's right. So what do you think? You've got a patient comes in overweight, starting to get insulin resistant. What's your go-to diet for that person?
All right. Well, first of all, I think we need a whole other show just to talk about that and do the debate because there's there's a lot of great information there.
This was a holiday show, Dr. Katz.
It is a holiday show.
Putting us on the spot like this.
Okay, we're going to bring it back around. You know, I think, you know, not to give a right or wrong answer, I think there's a lot of different diets out there. And I think this is really overwhelming for patients. Mm-hmm. And, you know, talking about all of these different types of diets, you can throw Mediterranean diet in there, just like Megan mentioned, intermittent fasting. All these different diets. You know, I think what I tell my patients is, you know, one, what might be a, you know, a strict keto diet or a strict plant-based diet for one patient might not be the best for another. And so it has to be customized to that patient. I think that's why it's so important for us as physicians and to refer patients to dietitians and to nutritionists like Megan and Shelley to, you know, break it down, in a sense, just kind of unpack it and walk through their different medical conditions, because there's so many things to take into account. because of diabetes, high blood sugar. Do those patients also have high cholesterol, heart disease? And, you know, patients go and try to do it. What I find is that some of my patients that go out to try to do the keto diet, I say in quotes, is because they go out and try to do it on their own, but they don't do it right. Now, if they follow, you know, with Shelley and do it with the right, the good oils, because there's, you know, there's good fats. There's the good fats and there's the bad fats. And you don't want, I don't want a patient going out and trying to do a keto diet and doing it the wrong way. And so there's, you know, the very low carb and low carb and, you know, modified carb. So a lot of my patients, I talk to them about, and I refer them to, you know, our Willis Knighton, you know, Diabetes Nutrition Center, or send them out to other nutritionists that they can see, you know, and talk about, you know, just it's modification, you know, everything in moderation, is not modification, moderation. And so, you know, they need to limit carbs. I mean, they need mm-hmm. to limit their sugars. Mm-hmm. Bottom line, mm-hmm. and there's a big debate, you know, all over the nation and all regarding this right now, and even coming out with the new, you know, federal guidelines and the ADA, the American Diabetes Association guidelines and ACE guidelines and all of the different, you know, guidelines for diet. There's a lot of debate on that right now. But bottom line, patients need to limit their carbohydrates, limit their sugars, and limit their bad fats. I think we all three could agree on that. And, you know, to bring it back to the patient for healthy tips, you know, I just tell them, you know, Christmas or Thanksgiving, that's one day. So like Shelley said, you know, get the small bird, not the big bird. Get the breast, not the big bird. You know, just I try to tell patients, especially my diabetic patients, it's like, you know, it's Christmas Day. Enjoy your Christmas Day dinner. But you need to send everybody home with all of your leftovers.
Yep.
Because what I find, mm-hmm. you know, it just kind of carries on and on and on. So find mm-hmm. a way to have your little, you know, to-go boxes and Ziploc bags that you can put your leftovers in and send them home. So you don't do that every day. So.
Yeah, you know, I think you really hit it on the head. The leftovers will get you, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Because now it's not just Thanksgiving. It's like the whole week after Thanksgiving that yep. you're eating. And people, mm-hmm. of course, they cook way too much. You know, one thing that always impressed me whenever I traveled abroad, particularly overseas, is that, you know, well, first off, no one diet is best for any person. It's whatever diet, I think, whatever you can follow and with, you know, moderation. Mm-hmm. But the thing that always impressed me was the portion sizes being smaller in mm-hmm. other countries. The people are smaller, the portions are smaller, and they walk more, particularly in the cities. And so it seems that for some reason, the supersizing of the people, as well as the portions, I think, doesn't matter what you eat if you're eating just too much of it. So, by the way, we haven't had any callers yet. So just to give that number again, 800-552-8502. If you have a question for anyone on our panel, or if you've had your own experience, successful or otherwise, with a particular diet or weight loss plan, please feel free to share it. Shelley, you
yes.
mentioned a few things in addition to some of the things that you add, which are the, would you say, sweetener alternatives.
Uh-huh.
There are a bunch of sugar alcohols.
Yes.
Do you use those?
I do not.
And why not?
Couple reasons. So one of the things that a lot of folks will say, like when these first came out, is like, hey, they cause stomach aches, you know? So some of them do.
Like Atkins type stuff.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And again, you are asking me the questions where I have to be so polite. I just have to say it causes tummy ache. But take that tummy ache, gang, and think of, you know, more things. How about that?
Gas.
How about, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. How about that? How about that? One of the other reasons I really watch out for sugar alcohols, and we'll talk about one that I do use, is that there are some studies that show that when we eat it, it can produce saliva. And it could kind of make us crave that item even more. So let's think about it like this. So there's a lot of bars on the market. So bars, I mean granola bars, kind of like, you know, the Atkins bars you say. And it's like, oh my gosh, these are delicious. And they are delicious. Some of them, they'll be like wedding cake and it tastes just like a wedding cake. Well, the issue is, I want another one. Oh, I want another one. Oh, I want some wedding cake. You know, so it kind of produces that feeling and that saliva. And I can't think of the word for it. You're making me think about some science stuff. And I'm like, dang it. I thought we were talking about some chef and foods over here. But yeah, so that's one of the problems. The other thing, the one that I do use is erythritol. And it isn't a particular product. We won't name it. But do look for the ones. I do look for one that's non-GMO. And that erythritol is manufactured a little bit differently. It is made with beets, pineapples, and it's fermented. So that's why they have given the alcohol name. It's fermented in a barrel, and I think a lot of folks know what product I'm talking about. It's actually made in New Orleans, but it is a non-GMO, so I do go for that one. But the other ones, for example, maltitol, that's the one that's in a lot of the Atkins products. Mm-hmm. Xylitol, you'll see it a lot of stores. You'll see it on a lot of keto blogs. Unfortunately, xylitol is very, very dangerous to animals. So I do not recommend that one because it is just a known thing folks may put their, you know, plate down and puppy comes and licks the spoon, and it is unfortunately really fatal for animals. So I'm like, well, if it's fatal for animals, then do you really want to be eating that mm-hmm. stuff? Mm-hmm. So that's my take. I am a big, I hope I can say this on air, I do like the non-alcohol stevias as well. Mm-hmm. And then I always think of what cooks the best. What cooks the best? So that's the other thing. It's like, what am I going to put in a product? And typically, even though on the label it'll say, hey, per cup of sugar, use a cup of this, oftentimes we use a lot less. Because here's the deal. I really pull sugar out a lot. And so when you don't have sugar for a long time and you take a bite of it, think about it like this. So someone who switched to diet soda and they maybe go to a baby shower and they're like, oh, go get me a diet soda. And accidentally they got a regular one, you know. And so they take a sip of it. It's like, whoa. You know, it hits us. It kind of slaps us in the face. Sometimes that's the same thing when we do modifications and we use all of that replacer. And I like to use the word replacer. So we even cut it down by half. Now, there's something to me beautiful about instead. And I mean, my cooking techniques have changed through the years. And I always tell folks, I think that's okay, about using something like the juice of a peach or something versus some of the sugar replacers, because I really like for folks to taste the realness of that food. And they'll just be like, wow, I never realized this peach tastes so sweet. So we do that transition. And it is a long transition. It's not something that happens overnight. And it's really a lot of fun. So that's why we like to do these tastings, so folks can kind of get that feel and see things.
Okay, so speaking of tastings,
yes,
I mentioned earlier that that we tried out some of your recipes.
I am like the judge here, gang. Okay. I didn't bring anything because I had a full clinic and was setting up some Instapots.
I thought you were bringing the brownies.
I was going to bring fudge, but it kind of got eaten.
Well, fortunately, we do have some of your recipes that we've tried.
Okay.
And we got these off of your YouTube channel.
My YouTube channel is Spicy Gang, so if y'all watch that, it's I say words.
Okay. Now, I brought the keto almond butter brownies with frosting.
I mean, you rocked it. It is pretty.
Well, don't say that until you taste them. And Dr. Kimber Rivera, now, what did you made?
I brought the peanut butter chocolate chip bread.
Very nice. Very nice. And then we also, let's see, Megan, you make anything at home you can hold up?
I made like a chickpea salad.
Okay, well, there you go.
And carrots and red onion.
Okay, well, it was good.
It's delicious.
Okay,
yeah.
Very good. Well, we'll take your word for it. And Renee Moran, our producer, she cooked as well. Are you on the air here?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yep. So what did you make?
Okay. I made the crock pot apricot meatballs.
Okay. So all of these, just so you know, these were all individually wrapped, and so there's the, as far as sharing of food, we're COVID safe. Okay, so just
they're practicing serve safe guidelines,
it's
gang.
All, yes, very safe. Okay, so do you wanna, Renee, can you tell us anything that went into these meatballs that made them particularly skinny Louisianian?
Well, the meatballs, I selected them because they only required three ingredients and you could throw them right into a crock pot. So I felt like that for somebody who's working and needs something that they can make even while they're at work and take it with them, it would be something fairly easy. So it has the frozen turkey meatballs, the primal barbecue sauce, and a brand of jam that is sweetened with stevia.
Okay. Now, Dr. Kimber Rivera, you're chowing down on these right now. What do you think? Oh, wait, your mouth is full. I won't wait. You can wait. Who doesn't have their mouth full?
Me.
Okay.
You did good.
Is that what they're supposed to taste
That's what they're supposed to taste like.
I'm going to try it. Someone else talk
to me. You did good.
It's Dr. Kimber Rivera. The meatballs are great, and the sauce is delicious. Very, very tasty.
They are very good.
And then, gang, you know, I kind of just want to add to the... Oh, I kind of just want to add to this recipe. It is three ingredients, and that's really what makes it pleasant. And I kind of said earlier, I've really changed my cooking. Because when I graduated from school, I was kind of, oh my gosh, we're going to cook this great rabbit stew. And if I'd have brought that to the patients I have now, they'd have strangled me. But, you know, when something's so little ingredients and just things we can find at our local supermarket, it really is a super duper win in my book.
Okay. And now you want to tell us a little bit about the bread?
The bread. It is made with almond flour and Crazy Dave's peanut butter that was recommended on the recipe. And chocolate chips. They're semi-sweet, gluten-free, non-GMO. Actually, all the ingredients are non-GMO. There is one egg, which, you know, for different people doing different diets, they could do different things. You could do an egg substitute, or you could do two egg whites, whatever you prefer. And then there is the erythritol sugar substitute that Shelley mentioned. A little bit of salt, a little bit of baking soda, and I think those are the main ingredients.
That's it.
It's very good. It tastes like cake.
Mm-hmm.
More of a cake than a bread, huh?
Oh, and it has a little xanthan gum in it, since I guess that's because of the almond flour.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to expand on that.
Sure. So when you, listen to me clearing my teeth. When you pull out flour of a recipe, flour has something called gluten in there. So if you go to the best bakery in town and you see the cake, it is fluffy, it is beautiful, it is amazing. And that is because it has flour, and that is the gluten that's in there. So when we use a gluten-free product like almond flour, like coconut flour, we even have some folks who have to use rice flour. This is where all our allergens come in. And thank you for making that, because I'm actually gluten-free. We need something to hold it together. Gluten's job is it holds things together. That's what gives it the beauty. So we have to put something that'll hold it together. Well, there's xanthan gum, and a lot of people are afraid of that because it is probably a super scary name, xanthan gum. That is the bacteria that comes from cabbage. So it's pretty much cabbage extract, and its job is it holds the product together when we pull gluten out of it. It's in your baking section at pretty much all of your local supermarkets. And it is what we call a non-perishable, so it'll stay in your pantry. So it's not one of those, it's one of those things I say, okay, let's invest in this. It's about $4. So I get it. Not the most cheap item. But if you're somebody who's going to bake a lot, it's going to be good. Now, if you're not a baker, I wouldn't worry about it. Because if you don't put the xanthan gum in there, all that's going to happen is just going to be a little crumbly. So, you know, again, if I was baking this for like the local church event where Bossy Betty is going to gossip about it, if it falls apart, I would probably buy the xanthan gum. But if it's just for me, I wouldn't, you know. So it's kind of one of those things that you can do, you don't have to do.
Okay.
Giving you
Renee,
the culinary stuff.
No, it's good. Renee, did you try the bread?
I did, and the best thing about it is it contains chocolate.
There you
yes.
go. That's very good. Okay.
It's so good. So can chocolate be part of a healthy diet as well?
Of course. Of course it can.
Now, all right, so let's move on. I guess the last one we have
is yours.
Keto, yeah. Now, there's no xanthan gum in this. This was almond flour and vanilla and almond butter, some butter, an egg, vanilla, a little baking soda, and heavy whipping cream. I think that's...
Is it good?
Is it good?
Y'all listen to my mouth. Y'all did good. I'm so proud. It's like I'm a proud mama over here. They cooked all of my stuff.
And that's supposed to be how it tastes, huh?
Yes. Let me talk about the recipe that I was going to make,
okay.
Which was the fudge. So we have a video on our YouTube with it. Everybody at work ate my fudge when I was setting up Instapods. But super easy. So grab your pen and paper. You could do one of two things. You could use the cup of heavy whipping cream or the cup of half and half. So if you don't want to do a high fat portion of it, guess what? You would do the half and half. We did 3 cups of a specific chocolate chip that's made with stevia. However, you can use a chocolate chip that's 70% cocoa or above. I don't like to use brands on air because I don't know the rules. And you'll see the brands if you go to the YouTube. Then we... have a tablespoon of the you could either use stevia or you could use the erythritol, and then a tablespoon of vanilla. So what you would do is you would just put the heavy whipping cream or half and half on your stovetop. You put it on high, you dissolve, or that means you put the stevia or erythritol in there. That's going to take about 2 minutes. Then you slowly pour the chocolate chips in there, and you're stirring at the same time. So this is kind of how we do fudge. You keep stirring, stirring, stirring. It's going to take about 2 minutes for that to melt. Pour your vanilla extract in there. Have it in your 8x8 pan that's lined with nonstick aluminum foil. Throw in the refrigerator for 2 hours, and you have the perfect low-carb treat. So this is great for our diabetics out there. Now, again, you know, if you don't, you want to kind of do it more lower fat, just do heavy whip, and you'll be okay.
Excellent. I feel so bad for Megan. She's just watching us eat and talk about the food. And she's looking so hungry. So we do have some extra, though, so we'll keep it in the fridge, and you can swing by sometime, and you can, you know, you can get yours. You know, I like the fact that we're giving people some ideas and some strategies in terms of how to approach this problem. And I think that this is actually a great year to do it because, you know, these large family gatherings, you're cooking all the family traditions. You don't want to experiment with something that potentially could bomb and nobody would like. And you're not necessarily feeling very confident. You don't know what it's supposed to taste like. But this year, with people having smaller gatherings, you know, there's more of an opportunity to just kind of take a chance, experiment with something, make one dish or two dish, and just kind of see. And so, if they want to get some of these recipes, could you give the link or the name of the website that they can go to, Shelley?
So it's super duper easy. It is my first name and last name, so you could just Google search Shelley Marie Redman. You could also go to www.skinnylouisiana and it's spelled out .com. If you want to see the demos of me doing these recipes, you can go to our YouTube channel. I will tell you, our YouTube channel is slightly sassy, but there's no, you know, bad words. I'm just super funny, I think, on it. You can visit those and it'll give you the step-by-step, because that, I think, is what folks are afraid of. And that's kind of, we didn't touch base on this. I think we lost that in translation somewhere, teaching people how to cook. It got lost somehow. And so you can feel comfortable watching that and, you know, kind of getting those cooking steps on there.
Great. And you mentioned something I want to go back to. You mentioned an air fryer.
Yeah.
You know, so much of the food here is you know, Louisiana, it's delicious, but fried.
And yes.
That seems to be something that perhaps is not the healthiest.
Mm-hmm.
But you mentioned the air fryer. How is an air fryer different and perhaps healthier than a traditional deep fryer?
Sure. So a deep fryer obviously has oil in it. So what you would do is you would dunk the food product in there for about 3 minutes or so. And I mean, we've watched all the shows where Guy Fieri takes people around and they're like, we're going to dunk this in the fryer. And I'm like, ooh. But the air fryer itself doesn't use fat. You know, you just put it in and the air hits all around it. So it's cooked evenly. Now, can you spray your nonstick cooking spray on there? Excuse me, for sure. Can you kind of like dip things in a batter that you make maybe with almond flour? For sure. But the beauty of the air fryer, number one, it uses less fat. Number two, it is fast. It cooks things a lot faster. So for a quick dinner for the family, it is amazing. I use mine about 3 times a week. And folks go, you know, you kind of did culinary school. Why are you not cooking these grandiose meals? I'm like, are you kidding? I don't have time. But just great investment. Very easy to use. I think some other gadgets are scary because they have so many buttons. I did, you know, these things with Instapots earlier today and people were panicked. They were just, oh my gosh, what button do I push? What do I do here? Whereas the air fryer, it really is just the knob that you turn on for that air. So it's just gentle on the mind, too.
Yeah. Are you familiar with a sous vide?
I am familiar with a sous vide.
I just got a sous vide.
Yes.
I love it.
Yes, 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 yes.
Dr. Kimberberry, you know what this is?
No.
Oh,
please
share. Is fantastic. You want me? All right.
Go for it.
So this is, it's like, I don't want to call it a hot water heater because it's a lot more than that. But basically what you do is you have this gadget that fits on the side of a pot or a plastic container, and it heats the water to a constant temperature. It could be 130 degrees, 140 degrees, 150 degrees, whatever it is, and it keeps that at its constant temperature. And what you do is you take a plastic bag. It could be a plastic bag that you put food into, or it could be, let's say, a pork roast that's comes with its own marinade and in plastic, and you can just put it inside this pot. But at home, you could take some, let's say, some frozen chicken breast or meat, put in a marinade or just some seasoning, get all the air out of it, you put it in the pot, And there's a setting, you know, you have to look up the recipe, but it could be like an hour and a half at 139 mm-hmm. degrees, which, you know, sounds a little strange. Well, you're not getting that high temperature into the center, but apparently, I guess you don't need to, because unlike the grill or the oven, where the outside of the chicken or the meat gets one temperature, stays at that temperature in order to reach the inside to get that to a different temperature and then dry the outside and the inside's maybe undercooked. By keeping in the water for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, whatever it is, you're basically cooking this food kind of evenly, and it's juicy. It doesn't dry it out. You know, I find the crock pot or the slow cooker sometimes pulls the fat out and some of the taste with it. You don't char the outside, although you can take a steak or chicken and then finish it off in a cast iron skillet. But I mean, it's really good. It's fantastic. Now, it does take a little time to plan, because it may take an hour and a half. But the nice thing is it doesn't seem like you can overcook it. So if you put it in there for an hour and a half and it sits for 2.5 hours, it doesn't really matter, because it just stays at that constant temperature. And you can get one that's remote. So you could put a bunch of ice water inside the pot, take a frozen piece of meat in a bag, put it in the ice water. It'll just stay cold the whole day. And when you're at work, just remotely on your phone, just, you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, just dial in what temperature you want it, and then when you get home, not only has it, you know, thawed the meat, but it's cooked it, so it's ready for you, and it's absolutely delicious.
It's really incredible.
Now, I know it works well for fish, chicken, and meat. Now, Megan, I don't know about your vegetables. I haven't tried it. Shelley, do you have experience with vegetables in the sous vide for Megan?
I do not, but vegetables in the air fryer are amazing. Notice how I keep going back to this air fryer.
Yeah, right.
Vegetables in the air fryer are great.
Fantastic. So, Dr. Kimber Rivari, so do you have any family secrets or recipes or things, since I know that you live what you preach, I know.
Well, I follow more of a plant-based diet is what I follow. I try to be as gluten-free as I can, and I try to limit dairy. But I've been doing that for a little over 3 years. And so my oldest child does that, and my younger one just kind of follows along suit, whatever we'll do, but yeah. Still would definitely prefer chicken strips or pizza on any day for breakfast, lunch, or dinner.
Right.
And my husband loves meat, and I still eat meat some. I just limit it, just to try to limit my red meat.
Right.
But that's what I do.
Yeah. And everyone here is very fit, right? So what does everyone like to do for exercise?
Oh, why are you looking at me? Why are you looking at me?
Because you're you're the fittest one here.
What? I'm actually very clumsy. And my son took after me because his broken leg just healed. I personally, this is Shelley, I guess the chef, by the way. I just do basic treadmill kind of weights. I never could get into, I wasn't an athlete. I did ag, y'all. I showed rabbits. So I was kind of a farm girl. But just those basics. I wish I could do cool stuff. I'm just clumsy.
Okay. And Dr. Kimber Rivari, what kind of exercise do you recommend most for your patients who are trying to lose weight?
You know, I tell patients, you know, whatever they can do, whatever they can get out and do, but hitting the pavement and walking, mm-hmm. you know, if they don't have a treadmill or they don't have a, you know, exercise bike or something, just getting out there and hitting the pavement and walking. Just if they can walk, you know, 5 times a week or do something every other day, that's the thing to do, to at least get out there and walk. If they can do some hand weights if they have the ability to do yoga and they have a great instructor like Megan that can guide them, that would be awesome. You know, whatever they can get out in there and do, just do some type of weight-bearing exercise.
Sounds great. And Megan, you just got your plug for your yoga.
So there you go. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I just want to thank everybody for being here. These shows always go super fast because they're so much fun. And anyway, I think it was timely. And I appreciate everyone taking the time out, not only to come, but for the listeners who took time out of their evening to listen. Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all health questions, you should consult a physician or health professional. The views and opinions expressed on Health Matters may not necessarily reflect those of Red River Radio, its staff, or LSUS. I want to thank Dr. Kimball Rivari, endocrinologist with Willis-Knighton Health System, Shelley Redmond, registered dietitian and author of Skinny Louisiana Cookbooks, and Megan Mabry, registered dietitian and certified yoga instructor. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran. Phone assistance has been provided this evening by Wally Derleth. And support for this program comes from the Knoll Foundation and also from the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. Please join us next Thursday for Health Matters. I'm Dr. Sanford Katz. Thank you again for joining us this evening.
All that meat and no potatoes just ain't right, like green tomatoes. Yeah, I'm waiting, palpitating, with all that meat and no potatoes. All that meat and no potatoes, all that food to the alligators, yeah. Hold me steady, I am...